Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 282 for comics originally released on January 2nd, 2013. Now, starting us off in DC is Superman number 15. This is sort of part of the, well, it is part of the Hell on Earth storyline. But, frankly, this one kind of read as a little bit of a, almost like an intermission from that storyline. And, I mean, it's clearly related to that story, but it was kind of a pause in the action, kind of a reintroduction into it. Now, you haven't been following the storyline, correct?
That is correct.
But you did pick up this issue, and you haven't been following Superman either.
I read Action, but I don't read Superman, Superboy, or Supergirl.
All right. Now, Action is taking place, I think, still in the past.
Yeah, still in the past, right. So,
and I'm pretty sure this is the first current-day appearance of Lex Luthor in the New 52.
See, I was, yeah, so I didn't know. He's in this super prison, so I didn't know if there was some precedent in the last several issues. But, you know, I thought it was an okay issue. It was, I like the art by Rocafort. I've always liked Kenneth Rocafort's art.
Mm-hmm.
The issue itself, I was a little bit, you know, unaware, you know, like how it was fitting into the crossover, because it was clearly marked as a crossover. It, as you said, it, you know, it makes sense if you're saying, oh yeah, it's kind of like an interlude, because I was a little confused by that, because it was just, it didn't seem to play in as a part of a crossover, like some of the other crossovers I've read that have, you know, recently that have been very involved in the crossover. So on one hand, that made it read pretty well for me, right? Because I didn't feel like I was that much stepping in on the middle of the action. I mean, I was able to pretty much pick up and follow along with what was going on as I read the story.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. And I liked the Lex Luthor interaction in it. That was well written, I thought.
I mean, most of this issue was basically a face-to-face conversation between Superman and Lex Luthor, with Superboy tagging along. And, you know, the Hell character, or however you want to pronounce that, from the whole Hell on Earth thing, is nowhere to be found in this issue. And so, I mean, that made it kind of an odd aspect of the crossover, but I mean, it's clearly picking up from where the story had left off and getting us to the next part. What gets me about this is it's really a good illustration of some of the interesting character choices they've decided to make with Superman. Because there are a couple places in here where Superman's just a little bit callous, and I'm surprised he wasn't even remotely concerned about how things were going to turn out for Superboy. You know, there are one or two places where Superboy's like, hey, wait a sec, how did you know I was going to be alright with this? And basically, Superman's like, oh, I didn't, I just found out. Okay! And there are a few places where Superman could have actually, you know, mentioned one or two things to, you know, be a little nicer and stuff to Superboy. It seems like he's, I don't want to say putting him through a couple of needless tests, but it sure felt that way. I mean, overall, I liked the art. There was one or two places the art didn't quite work for me. Specifically, when we first see Lex Luthor's cell, Superboy mentions, are those antimatter cannons? And I'm like looking around, it's like, I have no idea what the hell he's referring to. I don't see anything that looks remotely canon-like, much less antimatter canon-like. So that was one of those where you get this big
kind
of...
Yeah, just kind of looks like a room with a floating cube kind of in the middle of it.
Yeah, a couple of floating cubes, but nothing that looks canon-like. And it's like, okay. That one struck me a little odd.
It was kind of weird in that you've got him in this floating cube in the middle of the room, and then there's a separated floating cube with what looks like a bathroom in it, and another separated floating cube that looks like it's got a bed in it and such. And it's like, how exactly does that work? Like, teleport around between these floating cubes, or do they, does the floating cube he's in drive around and connect up to some other floating cube when he has to go to the bathroom? Or
I'm assuming the others just come out to him to where he can use the facilities, but not have constant access to them.
It's kind of weird. I mean, if he can access it at all, you know, Gold's going to do whatever he's going to do, you know?
It's, I suppose, one thing to have a few minutes access to it periodically versus, you know, 24/7.
Well, I assume like when he's in the bed one that he's there for more than a few minutes.
Yeah, I don't know. It is a little odd.
I didn't think too much about it when I was reading the comic. Now that you've pointed out the antimatter canon thing, I'm starting to think about this panel far too much.
I mean, I think this should make a pretty good jumping on point. Again, the fact that the lead villain from the crossover is nowhere to be found here, and this is very much a step away from the action, was a little bit of an interesting choice. Not a bad choice, nor one I necessarily disagree with. But I think they could have pushed this a little bit more as kind of a jumping on point into the event. And I like the way they touch on the Teen Titans, the Justice League, and a few things like that, to where if you're kind of using this to jump into the bigger picture of the DC Universe versus just one or two titles, it could be a good issue for that. I did find it a little odd that when the Justice League showed up, they had, you know, both the Batman and Cyborg had no idea that this prison even existed. Doesn't seem particularly well hidden, and since, you know, Argus is giving orders to these guys and stuff, and Cyborg is, like, tapped into their infrastructure, I found it a little hard to swallow that Batman and Cyborg knew nothing about this place. Overall, though, I like the characterization of Lex. I like kind of the chess match aspect between him and Superman. The story was good. I still think this version of Superman is way too powerful, and at some point they're going to have to ratchet his power levels down a bit within a couple of years. But overall, I thought this was a good issue, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was. I was a little curious about the Justice League appearance in there, and if they're going to now be pulling the Justice League into the rest of the crossover. Because, I mean, that's
certainly took it that way. To me, there was no doubt at the end. You know, at least the couple of members that bothered to show.
Yeah, as Aquaman's busy over having Metropolis, Boston, and Gotham City being flooded. But wait a minute, the Justice League are there, too.
Well, and Green Lantern's not.
Yeah.
So for me, solid 4 out of 5. Really enjoyed this.
I'll give it a low 4 out of 5. I mean, it wasn't something that is going to get me to jump back onto the Superman franchise. I thought it was an okay issue. I didn't dislike it, but it just wasn't enough of a story that made me say, wow, I'm really missing something with Superman here.
No, and I would agree with that. It was kind of a low-key issue in that respect, but I also think for coming in, you know, in the middle of a crossover arc within that family of titles, it was surprisingly accessible.
Right, and that's why I gave it a low 4 as opposed to a 3. I thought that, you know, of times when I've stepped in on the middle of something, this actually seemed to handle it a lot better than most of them, so I'll give credit to Scott Lobdell on writing on this one.
Cool.
Next up, we've got New Avengers number 1, or probably should be called Illuminati number 1, but they're going with that Avengers title.
I actually would have done this possibly as New Avengers 0.1. There's something about a first issue of a series that starts with a previously in this series. It's like, well, that's interesting. I mean, granted, there's been, you know, already two other versions of volumes of New Avengers. This, though, really ends with the team starting to assemble. So it's not like we've got the New Avengers really as New Avengers in this issue. And since it really focused heavily on just kind of what leads the Black Panther to assemble these people, it could have been a valid 0.1 issue.
Yeah, in general, just reading this issue, I really liked this issue. It read to me like the same guy who wrote the Fantastic Four issues that I liked, as opposed to adjectiveless Avengers, which I read that and it was like, what happened? I mean, for me, you know, what happened to the Jonathan Hickman that I was reading when I was reading Fantastic Four? Because he was going for a different feel with that book, right? He was going for the big, you know, epic villain and, you know, battle-y kind of thing, whereas this was more of the low-key interaction, personalities type of story that he tells. This read more like a cross between his Fantastic Four style and S.H.I.E.L.D. that he wrote.
I would very much agree with that. There are one or two odd storytelling choices. Specifically, after we get kind of the page of credits, the story cuts to now. And I found that odd because I'm pretty sure that now is going to be taking place next issue, not now. Because, again, I'm assuming Reed's talking to the other people who get assembled. And then we cut to 26 hours ago and move forward. Mm-hmm. The other thing that just is a nitpick, part of this takes place in, like, another realm, and they intentionally kind of subdue the coloring, and it's all kind of got a reddish overtone and stuff like that. So much of the issue takes place there. I thought that was a really unfortunate decision and really kind of didn't make the art kind of pop as much as maybe it could have and should have. Whereas the art that actually takes place, you know, on Earth, I thought looked pretty good. I mean, the art itself, the drawing was good, but the coloring was better on those.
I mean, yeah, I can understand that comment. It, whenever they do that kind of a thing where they're setting a mood by putting a general color cast across the entire page, you know, and they do that a lot on things when they're like inside, where they're like implying that there's some kind of, you know, red or blue or whatever kind of lighting going on, and it kind of washes the whole thing in color, skewing towards a particular tone. There's some kind of artistic choice and artistic reason why they do that all the time. I'm not a big fan of that. So I can completely understand that comment. The one other art thing that just, and I'm not even reading all these books, but it seems like there's at least three or four different Captain America costumes running around. This is more like the regular Captain America costume that we see on the last page.
Yeah.
And he's got a different costume in Avengers, and he's got a different costume in Captain America, and well, in Captain America, he's not even in the Marvel Universe. You know, currently he's off in Dimension Z. So,
I understand the question about that. The inconsistency is, you know, a little annoying. Although we saw him put on a different costume in Avengers, so maybe that takes place slightly after this.
Sure.
The costume thing that caught my eye was on the page with the staple. When did Black Panther get this magical morphing face mask?
Yeah.
Where it just kind of, you know, retracts and grows back onto him at will.
Yeah, when I was reading that part, I was kind of like, it bothered me a little bit. It's kind of like, why is this face mask going on and coming off and all this kind of stuff? It's almost like I can understand when they do it with Tobey Maguire in a Spider-Man movie or something. He's got to be pulling the mask off so he can get his moment in the sun, and you know that it's Tobey Maguire underneath the mask, but it's a comic book. You know, I don't need in the middle of a scene for him to be pulling his mask off. And
well,
pulling his mask
him...
off is one thing, but in this case, it seems to like be growing on and off his face.
I can see him pulling it off, though, in this case, because of how they set up kind of this one kid he's with, Nakono, and how his father's grandfather was a Black Panther, and how this Black Panther kind of has his spirit inside him, and therefore, you know, feels the emotions his great-grandfather or whatever would have. So, I mean, I get it's a personal moment. There's a connection there or whatever. But again, the magic morphing face mask, much like when the new Captain Marvel had it, it's like, where did this come from? You know, why did they think this was a good choice? Not that it's, you know, a massively bad one or anything. It's just, it struck me as odd. The other thing that struck me as indulgent was the two-page, you know, New Avengers Illuminati. You know, just a few pages before the end. Like, this isn't a movie. You know, these two-page credits, after we had two-page title thing, after we already had a page of credits early on, just seems overly indulgent.
That's a Hickman thing, though, right?
Not exclusively. It's
no,
in
Hickman
other Marvel books.
Hickman does it a lot. I mean, he does this in, like, his creator-owned books, too, all the time.
But Bendis also has had it in a couple of things, too, I think. The other thing that struck me as a little odd is Manifold is with this, whatever her name is, the person behind all the problems here. Yet this is, I think, a very different Manifold than the one over that became a member of the new, the a new member of the Avengers. I was about to say he was a new Avengers, new Avenger, but this is new Avengers, and that would be confusing because he's not in here. There's this character here, which is confusing, if any of that made any bit of sense.
So are Marvel 399 books supposed to be 20 pages of story now?
Yes.
Okay.
Why?
I don't know. I just hadn't been paying attention, but when I saw that big splash page, I felt, you know, the double page, I felt compelled to count the pages, and there were only 20. So I was thinking, they're supposed to be 22, because, well, whatever.
No, they're 20. For the extra dollar, we get the, quote-unquote, the free digital copy.
Okay, yeah.
So I thought this was good. Certainly, I think it was better than Avengers. And I agree that this is more the Hickman we're familiar with from, like, Fantastic Four stuff and telling more stories kind of along those lines. I'm very interesting to see what he does with the new Avengers once they actually, you know, get together and start talking, which apparently is happening now, but not in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll see where it goes. Good start to it. So for me, I'd give it probably a low 4 out of 5.
I liked it a lot more than that. I would give it a high 4. This was just in contrast, because I came away from this saying I really liked this, but it did have problems. I mean, being a new Avengers thing, and it's pretty much just a Black Panther story as it sits, with some other characters showing up at the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as the first issue of an Avengers title, you know. It is what it is. I mean, at least I read this and I said, wow, that was a really great comic when I finished it. So it had that going for it. I think, though, that the audience that Hickman's going for with this has got to be a different audience than is being explicitly targeted with the regular Avengers title.
Well, I think with the Avengers titles, they're going for more grand action adventure, epic, you know, summer blockbuster movie type stuff. Whereas with this, since it's dealing with the Illuminati group, I think it's going to be more hardcore comic fans into the big picture Marvel Universe stuff.
Right.
Or the history of the universe or whatever, and the continuity, you know, I don't want to say the baggage, but you know what I mean, versus just,
oh, yeah.
How can we wow somebody now?
No, absolutely. I agree with that. So, anyway. It was a good issue. I really enjoyed it. And it's something that I will be collecting this title, as opposed to, you know, I decided not to collect the main Avengers title. What will cause a problem for me is if this and the other Avengers title start crossing over in lockstep with one another.
Yeah.
And that would probably cause me to drop this title as opposed to start getting the other one.
I can understand that.
Yeah. So our last book for the week is an indie. It's from Dynamite. It is Vampirella Strikes. And I wanted to give Vampirella another try. It's been a while since I've read Vampirella. And what's interesting about this title is I'll review the book, and then I'll talk a little bit about my main problem with it. So Vampirella in this series, and I haven't been reading it for a while, so I can't make comparisons to immediate past. She's the kind of vampire angle is somewhat downplayed, although she is, you know, you see fangs here and there, and she's kind of drinking blood, you know, a little bit in the issue, not like really overtly. They don't show her like, you know, on anybody's neck or anything like that. But what she's mostly become in this storyline is a supernatural monster hunter. That seems to be the tack that they're taking. She's got a crossbow and she's fighting demons and you know, it's more like a dark action adventure kind of series. This is a really not an apt direct comparison, but it's almost like a Buffy the Vampire Slayer kind of a take on Vampirella, which is slightly different than I recall the character being. But, you know, that's okay. I mean, I thought that the story itself was a decent enough story. She's fighting a bunch of demons. There's some cut scenes with some, you know, black market and angelic body parts and, you know, so there's angels and demons in here, and Vampirella is kind of right in the mix. The interesting part about this is they've gone away from Vampirella wearing that really skimpy costume that everybody associates with Vampirella. And why might we still associate that with Vampirella? Well, it's like on the cover of every Vampirella comic that they publish for the most part. I mean, actually, this issue had a whole bunch of different covers, of which two of them actually have the costume she's wearing inside the issue mostly. I mean, the costume she's wearing inside the issue, it's just like, you know, black pants and kind of a black corset. On the cover, of course, that corset is way more open, revealing a tremendous amount of cleavage because it's a cover, but that's not really how the inside of the issue is. She's wearing more, you know, just regular kind of clothes, you know, dark goth kind of clothes. And that's the funny part about it is I don't mind that, right? It works with the story and it kind of pulls the story away from being just this really cheesecakey art. But that's where it kind of just dynamite is going with this. They're still selling the comic with the cover, and the vast majority of the covers that I ever see on the rack for Vampirella have her in that red bikini kind of thing. And that's not what she's wearing inside the issue. It's just what they use on the cover to sell the comics. So that's just, I would say it's strange, but it's not strange. It's marketing, right? It's just like you put on the package what you think will sell the package, and then inside is just whatever the inside is. I find it good at least that there's a couple of the covers that have the actual costume that she's wearing. But
I find it sort of interesting that that's, you know, like the first thing you want to kind of talk about with that book, because in the Superman issue we talked about earlier, he's wearing a different costume inside than he's wearing on the cover too. Yet I'm not even sure if you necessarily noticed that.
No, I noticed it. Okay. He gave his Kryptonian armor to Superboy.
Yeah.
But you're not putting Superman on the cover to, you know, in a sexy thong Speedo or something to sell the
comic.
They're
not doing quite the objectification that they're doing with Vampirella. I agree with that, but...
And it's not the first thing I talked about. It's
true,
the second.
True. Second. Fair enough. But it's a major thing you've talked
about. It's a major thing because...
And I'm not saying you're wrong about it, because I agree. They're using it as a cheap sales tactic, and be consistent with how you portray the character for marketing purposes and how you use the character.
I mean, I have not read a Vampirella comic in years, but I see them on the rack at the comic book shop all the time. And every time I see it on the rack at the comic book shop, she's wearing the, you know, the red costume. Once I bought this and read it, I remembered, I said, well, the last time Dynamite did a Vampirella comic, I had the same comment. It was like she was not wearing in the book, you know, what she was wearing on the cover. But then I had forgotten that over the period of time, because all I ever see of Vampirella is, you know, every time I go in the comic shop, and I walk down the rack, there's the Vampirella book and there's a couple of covers of her in this other costume. So the image of Vampirella that kind of sticks in my mind is what I see on the covers. Mm-hmm. And it's different. Whereas Superman, you know, you're right. I mean, the reason it didn't probably poke out to me that much is because what he actually is wearing in the comic is what he wears in Action Comics, which is the only Superman book that I read on a regular basis.
Well, what he was wearing.
What was wearing. Action. But I mean, it's a costume that I at least am associating with Superman in my mind of late. Yeah. So there wasn't a big dissonance there between what I expect to see him in and what I was actually seeing him in. And they actually explain in the issue, you know, that Superboy was in fact wearing his armor for various reasons. So anyway, I mean, the Vampirella Strikes book, I thought it was a good story. I'll give it a 4 out of 5, as a, kind of dark action adventure, horror fantasy kind of series. If you like that sort of thing, you should try it out. If you're actually put off by Vampirella because of the scanty costume that she's wearing on the cover, she's not wearing that anywhere in the comic, so don't let that put you off. On the other hand, if you were thinking, wow, I want a cheesecakey book where I see a woman running around in a scanty costume, go buy Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose, because Vampirella is not wearing that anywhere except on the cover. So, you know, just be aware of that. That's the only thing. I mean, the actual story was a pretty decent story.
Cool.
So what else did you read this week?
I've read most, but not all of my stack. I've still got, I think just two comics left for this week, The Red Ten and Youngblood, so I haven't gotten to those yet. Got the final issue of Hero Worship, or maybe I should say the final issue of this volume of Hero Worship. It looks like they're planning on maybe telling more, which struck me as really odd, since at the Austin Comic Con here, I talked to somebody at Avatar and asked if they were planning on doing anything. He's like, no, it's just going to be the one miniseries. So either he didn't know, or
I'm guessing it was a guy at Avatar who never actually read Hero Worship.
Probably.
Or was not clued in on the ending of issue 6.
But the answer, I don't know, would have been acceptable.
Yep.
And would have been better, actually, in that case.
I liked how they ended it. It was pretty good.
Yeah, it was good. It was interesting. It's been a good series. Also continuing to enjoy Hypernaturals and 47 Ronin.
Mm-hmm.
And what else did I get? First issue of Morbius was more interesting than I was kind of expecting.
I really liked the first issue of Morbius. I picked it up at the comic shop and to get the sketch cover and read it, and I added that to my pull. It's been added to my Marvel pull. I quite enjoyed where they went with that one. And I liked the writing style. Was it felt different than other Marvel books that I'm reading. You know, with kind of like those inner cut moments that he had. But it read worked for the series for me. I liked the storytelling style in it. And the art, I liked the art too. That was quite a good book. And it's, you know, my Marvel list is getting bigger. I was down to like
Five at one point.
Yeah, I was down to like 5 titles. I mean, I was getting like probably 8 or 9 books because of double shipping, but you know, I'm up somewhere around 12 or 13 different Marvel series now. So that's different. I mean, that means that there's some part of Marvel now that is in fact working for me. Let me check my order here for January. I've got 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14 different titles from Marvel.
Cool.
On it. Only one double ship out of all those. So I think a lot of the books that I've dropped have been the double shipping books. So I'm actually getting 15 comics and 14. Well, that said, one of those comics is Age of Ultron 1, which they solicited 3 copies of, but I only ordered number 1. I want to see what that's like before I, you know, jump
commit
on board
it, yeah,
and have like 9 issues of it ordered before the first one ever hits the street.
Makes sense.
But no, I mean, the variety across Marvel and some of the, a lot of what I'm getting from them now is based on, you know, the creative teams. They've got some, if you would have told me a year ago that I was going to be ordering 2 different Wolverine books, I would have kind of like said, it's within the realm of possibility, but it's not likely. And here I am ordering 2 Wolverine books. So
if somebody told me a year ago you'd be ordering 2 Wolverine books, I'm not sure I would have believed them either.
But it's the, you know, Frank Cho on one, and you got Alan Davis art on the other one, and it's like, hey, I like those guys.
Yeah. So, anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
It does it for me this week.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Green Lantern, the New Guardians annual number 1 from DC, Thunderbolts number 3 from Marvel, and Infinite Vacation number 5 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.